Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with
Samira Wiley,
Emmy-nominated co-star of The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu. Man, it's such a powerful show. You know, I just binged the whole season on Hulu, and it's so heavy that it's a different sort of binge. It's not like, ooh, cliffhanger. It's like, ooh, I got to prepare myself. There's some heavy scenes, but such a genius political commentary. So we left off, and we're here talking season two. We left off June, you know, that she just got him to drop the stones. We're not going to stone everyone. She just left the house, a little ambiguous of where she's going to go into the light or the dark. Mm-hmm. And your character is made her way to Canada, right?
Yes, yes.
And hooked up with Luke, mm-hmm. Who called you a family member. Where does season two sort of pick up with that? Without any huge plot spoilers, but just generally, where do we sort of go from here?
Well, first of all, I want to apologize to you because you binge-watched The Handmaid's Tale. You're not supposed to do that. You binge-watch something else, not The Handmaid's Tale. You need time to process everything like that.
Once a week, maybe.
Once a week. I actually usually tell people, do not binge-watch this show. But no, we pick up back in Canada, where we left Moira off. We see her struggle this season through all the difficulties of being a refugee, which is something that people are dealing with on a day-to-day basis. It's so wonderful in the beginning, everything on the surface. In the finale episode, we see her get a health insurance card. We see her get money, and women aren't even allowed to have any possessions. She's not getting raped every day. These are all wonderful, wonderful things. But you know, it's the unfamiliar. None of her loved ones are here. She has Luke, and they are trying to build, you know, a stronger sort of, they have sort of a sibling rivalry, relationship, but trying to, you know, really make that her family. And we see all the wonderful things, but then all the horrible things, because the Gilead was the evil you know.
Right.
You know, we hear that all the time.
The devil you know versus the devil you
exactly,
don't.
The devil you know. And not that this is a devil, but it's a devil because she doesn't know it. You know what I mean? And it's lonely and it's sad and she doesn't have June. Where's June?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Talk a little bit about, I love the evolution of your character in season one. You know, it starts off where, you know, when June first arrives, you're the tough one. You're like, hold your shit together. You know, don't let them get you down. And then later in the show, later in the series, she turns that back around on you after the whole Jezebel, I don't know what you want to call it, whorehouse kind of a deal.
Yeah.
And so just take me sort of into her journey on, you know, she starts at that tough as nails and then how she sort of falls and then picks herself back up again throughout season one.
The character that we see, you know, how we are first introduced to Moira, that's what attracted me to the piece so much, was she's such this badass, you know what I mean? And, like, she's got so much resolve and she's going to be the one on the front lines of everything. And to see that wither away during the first season, when we see her at Jezebel's sort of become a shell of herself, it's so disheartening. And the way I had to justify it in terms of being the person that's bringing her to life is I had to just tell myself that this is for survival. There's no way that she could survive in this place if she was bucking up against everything every second, because she wouldn't win. Because unfortunately, we're in Gilead, and in Gilead, women don't win. I mean, the only way we see that she has found some triumph is when she is escaping things. You know what I mean? When she's escaping the Red Center, then there's a rush of exhilaration. When she's escaping Jezebel's, then you see a smile on her face. When she finally escapes into Canada, then, you know what I mean? It's getting
and
away.
You lay down on the ground and have
Yeah. When we finally see the the Canadian license plate.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was a fun moment. It but she has to do that. She has to resort to that shell of herself that we see in Jezebel's in order to survive. And she even takes another name, Ruby.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's not who she is, but that is literally, so I will not die in this place. I have to create this alternate reality.
And she almost gets sucked into, she almost finds that new Ruby persona comfortable. And she even says, like, I was doing okay until you got here, back here, June. You know what I mean? Which is the complete opposite of what she was before. Well, a lot of these shifts in your character, her confidence and servitude, happen, like you said, around these escape moments. And I just, I sit there and marvel at you and Elizabeth Moss. Some, like, let's, for instance, at the train station, or the subway station, when she, when you're both about to escape, but you get on and she doesn't get to. Yeah. There's so many moments where you have to just do it with glances across the subway platform. You know, talk about how, and throughout the show, because you're supposed to be meek and mild and not really speak out of turn, but explain how there's, you guys have to do so much with just your faces.
It's, you know, it's so interesting. There's a poster behind you of Elizabeth with her her headdress on, and it's reminding me of how much this whole show is feels like a collaborative effort to get this story right. Even the costumes, you know, you have this thing that's this hood that's covering your head that you literally cannot say something to your neighbor without moving your. So you almost
it's like you have it's like a horse with blinders on.
Exactly. So you have to become a master at communicating in ways that are not are nonverbal. When I say I mean Moira and June's relationship, they are able to have an entire conversation across the room from each other. They are in so many scenes at the Red Center where they're learning how to birth, or they're learning how to do the ceremony, and they're literally across the room from each other. But there are whole scenes where that is just about Elizabeth's eyes and Moira's eyes.
And you're lucky because not every character even has two eyes to work with. You know?
Yeah, that's true. But I think that's another thing. It's about survival. Yeah. They have to do that. They have to do that in order to make it onto the next day.
I mean, you're sort of hinting at it with how she can say so much with her eyes. But tell me a little bit more about Elizabeth Moss and how.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure. I mean, you were doing Orange Is the New Black. She was doing Mad Men, and now you guys collide here. But what just makes her able to carry the show? There's so many great scenes, especially that. God, I mean, I could list a million. But that scene when she sees her daughter out the window of the church and can't go, and she's pounding on the window crying, and then really tells her captor off, you know,
in the front seat.
But just so many great scenes, but just, you know, what blows you away as an actress watching another actress work?
I mean, honestly, Lizzie is, I don't know where she came from. She is a literal ball of just pure talent. The way that I am continually inspired every single day by watching her work is a gift. It really is. It feels like I'm in, like, I'm paid for some, like, special master class to be able to, like, know how to act or something. And to be able to have a scene partner that you can, you know, it's like having, like, an amazing, like, tennis match.
Right.
You know what I mean? And but you're playing up against, like, one of the best players in the world. And somehow, like, you're, like, it's making you better. You know what I mean? That's how I feel about her.
You're up each other's game.
Yeah, and Dowd and everything. I mean, like, they make me better. I know it. It's fun going to work. It's not easy. It's not like I'll just, like, do this off the, you know, off the back of my hand. We'll just see what happens. No, it's actual really working, like, making sure I'm looking into your eyes. I couldn't do this job if I wasn't, you know, like just from the back of my hand. I need her eyes. I'm Elizabeth's biggest fan.
I'm sure she's your biggest fan too. On the flip side, on the darker side, man, Joseph Fiennes, freaky, and his wife. What's the actress that plays his wife?
Yvonne.
Oh my God, they are just so freaky. And I mean, I remember him in, like, you know, The English Patient and stuff. And then to see this, it's just like, oh my God. But speak about how they sort of set the tone for this dystopia we have.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's really interesting. Like, Serena Joy, his wife, she is, she's a woman, and I honestly do believe that all the women in Gilead are oppressed, not just the handmaids.
Sure.
I think that they have a false sense of superiority, the wives cast.
Well, you even see some of her hurt reaction as she's forced to sit there, and I mean, God, it's so twisted. Like, you know, the intercourse while the handmaid's laying in her lap, and so many moments. But there are those cutaways, to your point, where I guess she pens the book about a woman's role and all that, but there's those glimpses where you're like, no, they kind of realize subconsciously they're oppressed too.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. And they, you know, it's so interesting because it's almost like the men don't have to do anything because they've set up this weird caste system with you, so you sort of take care of yourselves, you infight with the women, infight with each other because they think they're of different castes or classes, and they're really not. You know what I mean? Like, what if they realized, like, no, guys, what if we just banded together? So it's really, really interesting, the women in this, women who are of the wives caste, like Serena Joy, because they are experiencing this false sense of superiority.
Yeah.
that is really tearing everything down, tearing them down.
And, I mean, the parallels to freaking Hollywood lately are, you guys couldn't have known when you shot the show that all hell would break loose with Weinstein and Me Too and all that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the writing was on the wall, though. You could see that coming. You could see how actresses, so many times with pay disparity and so many other things, were part of that caste system in casting, no pun intended. But, you know what I mean? Like, just speak to how this show arrived before that stuff, obviously, but or before it all came to glaring light, but how it was such a show for the moment. And to me, I mean, that all factored probably into why it won Best Drama and all that. I mean, it's a movie of the zeitgeist.
Yeah, it really, I think it's,
or a show of the zeitgeist.
I always feel like it's I want it to be my responsibility as an artist to reflect the time that we're living in. And somehow I've fallen into this show that is doing exactly that. It's not that we wanted, you know, for all these things to happen, but I think it is a testament to how in tune our writers are to exactly where our country is, where we are globally, everything like that. When I read each new episode, it's like, I'm sure it's like, well, it's going to be like watching new episode for everyone else, and how exciting that is. And it blew my mind how in sync they were with our world.
Right, it's set in the dystopian future,
yeah.
But it's not far off from what we are now.
And that's scary to think, but it also makes me feel an immense amount of responsibility to be able to get this story right, tell it with integrity, and yeah.
Yeah, for sure. the fact that, And just to put a button in that, the fact that Margaret Atwood could write this in what, like decades ago in the 80s or something,
yeah.
And it's still so relevant to today,
yes.
That's crazy to me. I know she's giving me the go home, so I had two other things I wanted to ask you. First, Orange is the New Black.
Yeah.
This actually dovetails fine. I mean, you say you want to be in a show that's commenting on the now. I mean, when your character gets choked out in the cafeteria in that show, that's very, I mean, I remember seeing that around Michael Brown and all that other stuff. So talk about how, just like Handmaid's Tale, but on sort of a different side of issues, mm-hmm. how that role was even relevant to now.
Yeah, I mean, that was a very conscious decision, obviously, on the writer's choice to be able to not only tell a story that was reflecting Mike Brown and Trayvon Martin, all of the young black, young people of color who were getting, you know, sort of cut down in these streets. And it was really conscious, and it's even so to the point of picking the character they were going to use. I asked Genji, I felt so hurt in the beginning after I first heard. I was shocked and confused and had conversations with Genji Cohen, the creator. And
you didn't want to leave the show.
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't,
yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
And she basically told me that they couldn't tell this story with anyone else. That the way that Poussey had come into the hearts and of people, of the viewers, was something that couldn't be recreated. And I felt all of a sudden, like, really honored, you know?
Yeah, right.
And like, all right, yeah, that's right. Like, let's get it. Let's do it. Let's tell it, and let's tell it right. And so, yeah, I guess from your saying from that, I am used to being in these stories that are fully commenting on exactly what is happening right now, and that is exactly where I want to be. I love watching TV, watching movies just for fun, just for laughs, just for shits and gigs, whatever. But
the great ones take it the other step, man.
Yeah, that's what I want my life's work to be.
Yeah. It should be, just as you were talking about an actor, an actress tennis match, it should be a tennis match with you and the audience,
yeah.
present, dystopian future. It's a back
That's
and forth.
So true.
Yes. Yeah, you know what I mean? Well, I guess sort of in closing, before we got to cut you loose, we got to talk about... You grew up around here.
Yeah.
You even said when we walked in, what'd you say when you saw my microphone?
Oh, I said, yeah, WTOP. I listen to them every morning.
So you listened to us growing up, but you're a DC gal. How did you get into, tell me about your parents growing up here, how you got into performing?
Yeah, my parents are, they're retired now, but for my whole life, up until last October, they were pastors in the Baptist Church.
Very progressive pastors.
Very progressive. Now they are also UCC, United Church of Christ denomination, which is a little more progressive. And I just remember, I will never forget the day that I heard on the radio about a summer camp that was happening at Howard University for kids who wanted to act.
Was it on WTOP, maybe? Who knows?
Let's just say yes.
Let's just go with that.
And it was, they took me, I don't know how seriously they took me, but they were like, yeah, let's take her to camp. Got in the camp, and I stayed there for... like the next 7 summers.
Wow.
And one of the people that I met there is my best friend to this day. She also went to acting school. Like it's you know, you got a lot of amazing, amazing people that come from here. You know, like I remember when I was in school at Duke Ellington in high school, Taraji, another local, came to visit the high school while I was like a student there. And to be sitting here now and have like this full circle thing, I've seen her like at the Emmys on the red carpet. It's like, it's crazy.
Now you're both at the Emmys.
It's
now,
crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. But it's also like awesome, and it feels like, yeah, of course. Of course we've come from here. Of course. DC is good stock.
It really is. Well, thanks for representing us so strongly, and keep doing it. I mean, you're picking great roles, and like you're saying, like these shows, at the time, no one knew they would be a big deal, but they're so of the present in the zeitgeist, you know, on so many levels, and you're just, so just keep kicking ass, you know. And I guess I have to end by saying, his eye is watching. No, what's the line?
Under his eye.
Under his eye. To end on a freaky note. No. Under his eye.
Praise be.
Bitch.
That's so good.
I love that. That's my favorite line of yours. Thanks so much. Nice meeting you.